Welcome to another Journey to the Blue Sky. My name is Aaron.
My name is Patricia.
I have to say, I think we're looking a lot forward to this particular episode because this is the episode when we finally talk about Snoopy and Charlie Brown, a Peanuts movie. So, or the Peanuts movie, if you're in America. And interesting that it basically has two titles. So, like, they had to call it Snoopy and Charlie Brown, a Peanuts movie in some places in the world because of copyright infringement in regards to the Peanuts movie. Because I do believe there is something actually called the Peanuts movie out there somewhere. Not actually know what it is or where it's even. Apparently, they have actually got to call it something differently. But here in the US, we're just going to call it the Peanuts movie just to kind of like stop any confusion, I guess, for anybody else.
Yeah, and especially since here in America, when we hear peanuts, we associate ourselves with either one of two things, the legume or Snoopy, Charlie Brown, Linus, Lucy, and all the other iconic characters created by Charles Schulz based off of the comic strip.
Yeah, so we've been looking forward to this episode because we've actually seen this not just once, but twice, actually. And we have to say that this probably has to be the best Blue Sky movie that we've seen so far.
Absolutely. And I actually saw this movie in theaters, and it was quite an amazing experience because I was surrounded by a bunch of kids who most likely were not introduced to Peanuts at all. Because, I mean, I don't know how it is in the UK for you, Aaron, but the Peanuts movie was definitely a major experience for young kids to get introduced to Charlie Brown and the gang for probably the first time in a long time, because even though that Peanuts has, in a way, never left, it's been a long, long time since we've had anything animated Peanuts related. It used to be a case in which we had like animated specials from CBS where we would have like TV shows or specials or even movies, but it has been a very, very long time since we had that. And it was at the point in which like a generation of kids kind of like missed out. And also since Charles Schulz's death in 2000, there hadn't been any new Peanuts comic strips in 15 years at that point in time. So I'm sure for a lot of people who went to see the Peanuts movie, this was literally their first time seeing Charlie Brown and Snoopy in anything. And nowadays we have the Snoopy show on Apple TV. So now a new generation of kids are able to see Charlie Brown and Snoopy and the gang in action. So I think this was kind of like the one that kind of kickstarted a love of the Peanuts gang again.
I mean, here in the UK, I mean, Snoopy actually was quite often on TV quite most of the time. He was on the BBC, part of like, I think part of the children's BBC lineup, I think back in the 80s and the 90s. So like, you know, the show was, you know, the animated show, I think was a thing, you know, back when we were. So I think a lot of people were aware, definitely a lot of people were aware of Snoopy and definitely were aware of like, I think probably was more the main character, I think, rather than Charlie Brown, even though like, you know, a lot of the adventures kind of like wrapped around, you know, Charlie Brown, or maybe some of the stories did really, but I mean, everyone would basically say, oh, it's Snoopy, and like Snoopy would basically be like, you know, I think it was referred to as Snoopy rather than Peanuts.
Oh, okay, so it's interesting.
Snoopy was more in the eyes of people more than I think Charlie Brown was.
I guess it makes a lot of sense because around the 80s and the 90s when Peanuts was still really popular and when it was still releasing a lot of specials and such, Snoopy became much more apparent in a lot of merchandise. There was the Snoopy snow cones. There was a lot of t-shirts with Joe Cool in it, him and Woodstock together. So yeah, Snoopy was definitely like the cool character while Charlie Brown was kind of like pushed into the background when it came to like a lot of merchandise. I mean, not to say that Charlie Brown and the gang didn't get themselves their own merchandise, but Snoopy was definitely like the face in a lot of them.
Yeah. So we got this movie, and but this is the thing, like so we again, I think we have the rule here where, like, we are familiar with the Peanuts, we are familiar with, like, Snoopy and Charlie Brown and, like, all the gang and everything like that. But really, we kind of, once again, we think we need to kind of, like, judge this movie on its own merits rather than, like, saying, oh, hey, we need to, like, realize, like, everything around it to actually understand what the movie's about, in my
Yeah.
opinion.
I
So
remember when
we're
the trailer first came out for this movie and people were really skeptical about it, especially for huge Peanuts fans because of the 3D animation. It's been a tradition for over 40, 50 years at that point in time that Charlie Brown and the gang have always been 2D styled. And when they saw the 3D animation, people were a little bit afraid that it was going to take away the charm of the 2D animation. But then when more trailers started coming out and when we got to see more of the action of the traditional stuff that you would see with Peanuts and with Charlie Brown, playing baseball or flying a kite or any of the sort, then people started getting more excited about it.
Well, I think development of the movie actually began in actually 2006, so 6 years after the death of Charles Schulz. And in the final release of the last Peanuts comic strip, Craig Schulz, the son of Charles, pitched a film idea to his son, Brian Schulz. 12th Century Fox and 20th Century Fox and Blue Sky Studios announced developments of the computer animated film in October 2012, with Steve Martino directing, due to his faithfulness to the style of Dr. Seuss in the film Halton Hears a Who. Also produced by Blue Sky, numerous elements of the comic strip were featured in the film, such as Charlie Brown's skating pond, the house, the wall, quote unquote, and Lucy's psychiatrist booth, as well as Snoopy and Woodstock's voice from Bill Melendez. The soundtrack was also composed by Christopher Beck, and contributions also were made by Meghan Trainor and David Benoit. So I think, there was a lot of care and attention put into the development of all of this. This was, like, something that the family wanted to see, effectively, because, like, there was two, like, generations of it that, in the family, who basically, pitched this idea over to them, and eventually 20th Century Fox and Blue Sky picked it up. Good on them.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So Craig Schulz and his son Char and his son Brian were really adamant on wanting to keep the authenticity of Peanuts to the big screen. They didn't want to make it modernized. They didn't want to do a lot of major changes that would kind of like remove what people loved about Peanuts in the first place. They just kept the original essence of Peanuts. And I think it works really well because, I mean, if you watch the original Peanuts shorts, it definitely feels like it takes place in the 1960s. I mean, you still have the rotary phones, they don't use computers, they don't use modern technology, and they still have the same clothes that they wore even in the comic strips. And I think that that works to his advantage because it keeps it timeless. And also, very similar to all the Peanuts animated specials and even the TV series, they use real kids to voice as these characters. Now, it's common nowadays for adults to voice as young kids because they don't have to worry about like, he had puberty, we need to switch him over to somebody else or any of the sorts. But no, they kept the authenticity where they actually had real kids performing as these characters, and it works perfectly well. Like, even if you were to watch like the Peanuts movie and then switch over to like some of the Peanuts specials, they sound exactly the essence of what you would expect to hear from all these characters. Charlie Brown is very depressed, and Lucy is the very snippy one. Linus is trying to be very supportive. Sally is the little sister who is very optimistic. Peppermint Patty is very rambunctious, and Marcy is like her little sidekick. So yeah, they all fit within what we know from the Peanuts characters, and it works perfectly well in terms of the casting. And I again, like, they were able to put in so much of the time and effort to make it feel like it was a classic Peanuts special from the 60s over into the big screen in 2015, not only for people who grew up with Peanuts, but to also introduce it for a new generation. And also, they used Snoopy and Woodstock's voice tracks by Bill Melendez to use. I mean, they voiced, the characters for decades. And unfortunately, Bill Melendez, he passed on several years before the Peanuts movie was in production. He passed away in 2008. So they decided, hey, why don't we just use all these archive voices of him voicing as both Snoopy and Woodstock? Woodstock to add into the movie, which, I mean, it would be a shame if they would have had somebody else other than Bill Melendez to voice his Nubian Woodstock. They're already iconic at this point in time. But yeah, I would say that everything that they did in honor of the Peanuts franchise to put into the big screen was done 100% correctly.
Yeah, I mean, the easiest thing they could have ended up doing was basically saying, oh, well, let's just hire all these celebrity voices and, like, let's just get them, like, you know, just to do that. And they're making, like, not very authentic. But no, they really went to, like, every single excruciating detail when it came to, like, you know, the animation, even the music as well. Like, you know, who would have thought that we'd see, like, we hear, like, you know, like a Peanuts, like, you know, piano rendition of Mission Impossible in this movie. Yeah, that's crazy to think about, really. But no, they really went for it, and they understood what the material was. They understood how the show felt. They understood how, you know, the humor works in this world, and they understand that, you know, these are all a bunch of kids and need to sound like the real thing and everything like that. And you know, and also the writing also as well, I think, also was pretty top-notch in this movie as well. Like, you know, it's so hard because keep this in mind, like, you know, Peanuts had, like, you know, at least the experience I had was that with Peanuts is that it had, like, an overarching theme, but it was like a bunch of little stories that also, like, were, like, sprinkled in as well, like, you know, to keep kind of like the whole main story together. That's the great thing about this. And I mean, I think we're here now, so I think we'll probably just get into, like, you know, the story of the movie.
Before we go into the story, you just mentioned the music. And again, the music is just as iconic as, say, the animation style and the voiceover style. I think that music by Vince Guaraldi is also a staple in Peanuts. Like, the jazz soundtrack is something that you would expect to hear from any Peanuts shorts or even the TV series. So I'm glad that they were able to keep that intact as opposed to, like, oh, let's just put in a whole bunch of modern music. Because, you know, jazz, I mean, you know, today's kids are not into jazz, but no, they were able to respect it by having a whole bunch of renditions inspired by Vince Guaraldi, or even playing songs that were even featured from the old Peanut specials. And also they did mix in a few modern stuff here and there, but we'll get to that when we get to the story.
Well, I mean, the one thing I would argue, though, about, you know, the modern soundtrack that they fitted into the movie is that at least it fit.
It does.
You know, like, exactly, yeah. So, like, you know, so it's not like they didn't, so, you know, it's not like a situation like Hey Arnold the movie where they're just, like, you know, they stuck in, like, you know, Little Romeo for whatever reason, you know, yeah. Like, it's just, so, I mean, like, they actually, you know, dare I say, Fro Rider actually fits in this movie somehow. Like,
yeah,
you know,
and Meghan Trainor, too. I mean, her song was able to fit in really well, too.
Mm-hmm. So I don't think they made too many mistakes, I think, in the tracks. And by the way, a lot of it basically is, like, the original theme anyway. So, like, you know, the other additional stuff really just kind of, like, falls into the background all that
sure.
much. You're not really concentrating on that because it's not a distraction. You know, it's like it is like sounds like Peanuts effectively.
It does, so. Yeah, and it fits well, and it's not too distracting. It doesn't overtake the presentation. It just is something that is just there for maybe like a few minutes, especially towards the dance, which makes a lot of sense. And then they just move on to the next thing, and that's pretty much it.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so we move on to the story?
Let's move on to the story.
Okay, so when a little redhead girl moves into the neighborhood, Charlie Brown becomes infatuated with her, though worries that his long streak of misfortunes will prevent her from noticing him. After Lucy tells him that he should try being more confident, Charlie Brown decides to embark upon a series of new activities in hope of finding one that will get the little redhead girl to notice him. Helped by Snoopy and Woodstock, he performs a magic show act to the school's talent show. Unfortunately, he's forced to drop his whole act in order to help his little sister Sally with hers, causing him to be abusively humiliated. Charlie Brown then signs up for the school dance and gets Snoopy to teach him. At the dance, Charlie Brown attracts praise for his skills, but he slips up during the performance. This sets up one of his shoes to hit the sprinkler, causing the whole dance to be cut short, and the students do selfishly look down upon him once more. Charlie Brown is then partnered with the little red girl to write a book report, but when she's called away to deal with a family illness, Charlie Brown decides to write the whole book report alone and ends up picking the novel War and Peace, which he writes comprehensive reports. However, when he gets into the playground and tries to get it signed in, he ends up basically shredding the whole thing, and the whole thing falls apart. But then it's discovered that he did really well in the test paper that, you know, is at the beginning of the movie, but then he finds out that he actually wasn't, and then he ends up on stage, you know, confessing to everybody everybody that, you know, this is not the report that, you know, sorry, this is not the test, this is not my test, and it's basically been mismarked. So but then, you know, at the very end, you know, the little redhead girls actually noticed that. The one thing I really like about this story, before any of it, like, it's like the finale, because I feel like, you know, this is a really good, you know, way to, like, you know, kind of describe the movie and the story. Like, it's a simple story, effectively. Like, you know, Charlie Baum is basically infatuated with this girl and tries to do something to kind of, like, you know, impress her to get her to notice him. That, you know, this entire time, so, like, you know, the reason he's becomes over his fears by doing stuff, that's the reason why he does the magic show act, and that's the reason why, you know, he'll take on the entire, you know, war and peace all by himself, effectively. Yeah. Like, that's the reason why he does the school dance. So, like, you know, from the very beginning of just the skeleton of the story, like, they know how to keep it simple, and they know what works, and they know how to utilize all the characters within all of this. I think they've done the story perfectly.
Yeah, and especially if you know the context of the little red hair girl. So for those who don't know, starting around 1967 with the TV special You're in Love, Charlie Brown, that was when he was so infatuated with the little red hair girl. He always wanted to approach her, but he was too shy to talk to her and say that I love you. And he never once, you know, confessed his love. Then there was another special around 1977 called It's Your First Kiss, Charlie Brown, where it's the homecoming dance, and he wants to be able to confess his love there and, you know, give her a kiss. And eventually he does. And, you know, it's basically like a continuing story arc where he basically wants to confess to her, but, you know, he's really shy and he doesn't want to do it because he doesn't know how he'll react, how she'll react. And the little red hair girl, very much so, like a lot of characters based off of Peanuts, where they're based off of either him, you know, Charles Schultz himself, or somebody that he used to know. The little red hair girl was based off of somebody he had a major crush on when they were working on the Peanuts shorts. So Donald May Wald was a person that he fell in love with, and he wanted to propose to her, and unfortunately she said no. But eventually, you know, they did remain friends, and Charles Schultz did ended up marrying somebody else, but he never forgot his inspiration for the little red hair girl, and so he would put her in several of the comic strips and on the Peanut specials. And when you know about the little red hair girl, about how she's really pretty, and that Charlie Brown is so infatuated with her, and how he's shy and not able to talk to her because he doesn't know what to say, and he fears that whatever that he does say or acts, that he's going to come across as a loser. It's pretty relatable, especially if you're somebody who once saw a person, you're like, I don't know what to say. I don't even know if they'll even like me, but I do like them. I want to be able to get to know them more. So yeah, it's pretty relatable in that sense, and very akin to what you would expect to see in the Peanut specials.
Yeah, but the one thing I'll say about this is that, you know, I've actually not seen the little redhead girl, you know, story, so I'm actually not actually familiar with that. But here's the thing, you don't even have to watch that in order to kind of, like, understand what's going on here.
Exactly.
And that's, you know, a good thing as well. And so, you know, the one thing I think that plays this movie is that you don't have to go back to the original source material and kind of, like, to understand what this movie is about, which I think is refreshing, I think, because how many times have we, like, been through movies? It's like, well, unless you, like, fully understand, you know, what's going on prior to this, unless you do your homework, you really don't understand what's going on in the lesson. You know?
Or even worse, that the homework assignment that you were doing so that you can get yourself prepared, and then when you watch the final product, it's like, wait a minute, they completely changed the test. It's nothing like what I was doing my research on. They completely, you know, had a whole bunch of additions or subtractions from the final product that it's almost unrecognizable. Just like when we were talking about with Epic.
Yeah, exactly. So, but obviously we get to do all this. So, I think what we should start with, like, the first part of it, which is, like, you know, Charlie Brown trying to do, like, you know, the music, the magic act, and doing all of that, and the fact that, you know, he drops the entire thing in order to help his sister, who, you know, is trying to do her her talent show, and she's just totally not being able to nail it, and everyone's laughing at her and stuff, and she's feeling really bad about it. And Charlie Brown, to his credit, drops everything and you know, plays, you know, the coward to the very end, so, you know, for her to, like, do her, like, a rodeo back. But then she ends up, you know, pulling down, like, the entire curtain and ends up, you know, basically exposing everybody else, you know, in the talent show, pretty much. And even though it all pays to laugh and everyone gets really entertained by it. So, like, you know, but that plays to, you know, Charlie Brown's character in this is that, you know, and also it goes towards, like, you know, what we'll talk about at the very end of the movie, at the very end of the point I'm making is that, you know, it's a great solid protagonist that we have with Charlie. The fact that, you know, he will, you know, he plans to do, like, all this stuff. He even gets Snoopy even to help him. He's a, then the reason, then after that, he realizes that his sister's, like, you know, not doing too well. And then he just drops everything for, you know, for Sally, effectively.
Yeah. So, yeah. And that brings the relatability of Charlie Brown is that every time that he's trying to do something, he ends up messing up. He tries to throw a baseball. The baseball hits really hard and then all of his clothes fall out. Or he's trying to fly a kite. Kite gets caught in a tree. Every time that he tries to approach a little red hair girl, he gets really nervous and shy. Or in the talent show's case, he wants to perform this magic act so that he can be able to, you know, be more popular and so that he can be able to be seen as a winner. But then he sees that his little sister's in trouble. And so he decides to help her, which, you know, Charlie Brown is a great kid and he's willing to help people. It's just that he is unfortunately a bit unlucky, and there are some moments in which he doesn't seem to be on top, and he sometimes wants to give up, but then he just, you know, gets back up again and tries even harder so that he can be able to get what he wants. But unfortunately it doesn't work out, and that's how it is for a lot of people. I mean, no matter how hard we try, sometimes just it doesn't work out, and we just have to try even harder to hopefully see if maybe next time we'll help. And
but that, I believe, because of all of that, I believe that's the reason why, you know, Charlie, you know, wins the respect of his peers, because, like, he tries so hard at, like, what he tries to do, and he doesn't, you know, he's not selfish in his motivations. You know, he'll try and do things for himself, but at the same time, he'll inadvertently also try and help other people out too. And so that's the reason why, you know, it's one of the reasons why everyone says at the very beginning, you know, come on, Charlie Brown, come out and play, because everybody respects him effectively, mm-hmm. because of the way he is, you know, like, I mean, that's the clever thing I think that this movie does. Yes, I mean, obviously he's unlucky in some of his endeavors, but everybody at least, you know, at the very end, you know, respects what he tries to do, you know.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. So,
like, yeah.
And then in between the Charlie Brown story, we also have Snoopy's story, which, of course, as we mentioned earlier in the podcast, Snoopy is a very popular character, and he's trying to write a book about the Red Baron and the Flying Ace, and which is classic Snoopy story. I mean, he always dreams about being the Flying Ace and rescuing people from the Red Baron. For those who don't know, the Red Baron was an actual World War I fighter pilot, and he did, you know, shoot down a lot of planes, and he was regarded as, like, one of the greatest pilots during that time period. And so we have the part in which Snoopy plays as the Flying Ace, and he's trying to rescue Fifi from the Red Baron, which, by the way, this is the only time in which you're going to be hearing a celebrity in this movie. Kristen Chenoweth is Fifi, and the only thing she does is, like, cry and scream and do some barks, and that's it. Yeah, like, I mean, we were complaining about, like, oh, you know, these movies nowadays just have too many celebrities, and, you know, they just either don't fit, or you can definitely tell that they're just playing, you know, just a character, and it's, you can't, like, overlook the celebrity part. But yeah, again, you know, what's brilliant about this movie is that they actually brought in real kids to play as these main characters, and they only brought in one celebrity, and she's a dog.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, like, at least she did her part.
Yes, so. Exactly. She did her part, yeah. But yeah, I mean, the stuff with Snoopy is actually a lot of fun. And again, you would expect to see Snoopy having a Flying Ace moment in some part of the story. And yeah, I mean, other than just, like, you know, snippets here and there where we get to see, you know, Snoopy interacting with Charlie Brown sometimes, the most part, it is about him writing this book on the Flying Ace and the Red Baron.
Yeah, I'm going to say something really controversial here. I didn't really enjoy those parts of the movie all that much.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I mean, like, I got to be honest with you, I was more interested in what Charlie Brown was going to do to try and get, you know, for all the stories that he was going through at that time. And I thought, I mean, I get that a lot of people like Snoopy, and I get, like, they all want to see, like, you know, an exciting adventure with him. And so, obviously, they created this whole, you know, story for him to write and everything like that. But I got to be honest, like, I was, like, watching it. I was thinking, when are we going to get back to Charlie Brown and, like, you know, the main story? I didn't consider it, like, the main story of the movie, effectively. Mm-hmm. I just thought it was just kind of, like, segues, if anything. Yeah, I gotta be honest with everybody. I didn't really enjoy it all that. Did you enjoy those parts all that much? I was kind of like waiting for like, oh hey, when are we gonna get back to like, the real world, effectively.
Yeah, I mean, I guess I can understand where you're coming from because, it's true that it doesn't really have too much to do with like the main plot. And yeah, I think that they were just adding that in so that, hey, we can be able to have this, cool action moment while we deal more into like the slice of life stuff. Which, here's the thing, at this point in time when this movie came out, there weren't a lot of slice of life animated stuff anymore. I mean, we had, sure, I think there was like Clarence, and then I think Craig of the Creek was probably either still new or hadn't even come out yet. And then there we had Wee Bear Bears, and then Arthur was still running. But for the most part, stories like this were like very, very rare. So I'm sure that maybe some people were thinking like, okay, these kind of like grounded, down to earth slice of life stories aren't apparent in like kids. Movies or TV shows anymore. Let's just add this stuff in so that maybe they won't feel completely bored with it.
Yeah, exactly. Like, but the thing I would say is that I mean, yeah, I mean, I've already imagined that's the reason they added the exciting moments. But I mean, yeah, I mean, I'm still, dare I say, more interested in hearing like, the slice of life moments. Funny enough, like, I feel like, it is refreshing actually, given the fact that, I mean, let's look at like, the other Blue Sky movies that basically have been my, like, I mean, they've all effectively been like a comedic action sort of kind of like, movies, I guess you could say. And now here we've got Charlie Brown and Snoopy, and they're not doing that whole type of thing. But I mean, obviously, it's all playing out more in Snoopy's mind more than it is like, actually happening, which probably kind of takes me away out of that really. But if you think about it, like, we've had Ice Age, we've had robots, we've had Ice Age, tons of Ice Age movie, Rio, Epic, and they like all these like kind of like sort of like comedic kind of, but also like we have some action in them as well. But here we have like the Peanuts movie that is basically just kind of like very down to earth and dare I say mellow
Yeah,
in
it
this.
is way more mellow than we've seen with a lot of Blue Skies movies in this point in time, where they were really focusing on like the slapstick comedy or very quick, snippy one-liners. Yeah, Peanuts is not that. Sure, it has humor, but a lot of the humor is more witty and sarcastic, and that's what makes it timeless, is that a lot of the dialogue that the Peanuts characters would say was very intellectual, especially for like young kids. Like, you wouldn't expect young kids to be stating a lot of these like intellectual quippy reactions towards one another, and that's what makes it like really amazing and sophisticated. I mean, that's what made Peanuts stand out compared to a lot of comic strips at the time, in which they were real kids and then they would just like talk in a way that they made it sound like they were adults as opposed to like children. And yeah, I think that something like this would be far away from what we would expect to see from a Blue Sky movie, where we would see like Scrat doing a whole bunch of crazy shenanigans with his acorn, or we would see Rio, where we have like, Blue and the gang trying to basically, get accustomed to not having to deal with the domestic life or having to deal with the streets of Rio de Janeiro, or even with like the movies that we've seen, like with Robots, in which we have the characters in Robot City, or if we had Epic, where they're trying to make it like this action adventure movie set in the forest and stuff like that. So yeah, something like Peanuts is something that you would not expect to see from Blue Sky. You would probably see it maybe with another animated company, but definitely not from them.
Yeah, definitely not. So, I mean, so that's basically the first, bit of it. Then we also get like the second bit where, like, he decides to, oh, I'm gonna go to the dance and I'm gonna try and impress there, because if I, win, like, the boy competition, and she wins the girl competition, which she's gonna do, then obviously, I can have that first dance with her and everything like that. But obviously, that doesn't all go to plan, and he ends up basically, smashing the sprinkler system and then cutting the whole thing short. Effectively, and doing that. But obviously, he gets to that point by basically, being helpful to like, his other friends. And by the way, once again, winning, respect of his peers by doing that, You know, like that's the one thing the narrative I love in this whole thing is that, you know, he'll try and set out to do something for himself, but then obviously he will then, you know, want to care enough about his friends that he will help them out where need be, and basically ends up kind of like, he doesn't get what he wants in the end, but obviously, you know, it's not that, you know, he tries to make things better, but obviously things don't always turn out the way that ends, but it's not out of lack of trying, effectively. Mm-hmm.
And that's what makes the character so relatable, is that he continues to try and he doesn't give up, even though that things are clearly against him.
Yeah, I mean, like, the story flows really well in this movie. That's the thing I will say about it. Like, you know, it's not erratic. Like, it's there is chaos that's currently going on, but it's controlled chaos, I guess you could say. You know, like, we all know that, you know, where the story of, you know, the Peanuts can be very chaotic at times, but, you know, it is contained very well within the story. And I think that's what works to Peanuts' advantage, you know, in this.
Yeah, and the reason why is because they kept it very simple, is that we have maybe like one or two storylines, but they all intertwine with one another. And in this case, okay, we have this part of the story where Charlie meets a little red haired girl, where he's working on the book report, where he gets noticeable from everybody because they think he did really well on his test. And that actually meets up very well with the storyline because it contains every single bit of the story arc within one school year. And then thrown in between, we have Snoopy working on his tale. And the reason why is because Charlie Brown is working on his book report. So, yeah, it all meshes together so well. It doesn't like go all over the place, or it doesn't just stick to one story arc. And it's like, okay, I get it. You know, what's going to be the next thing? So, yeah, it actually does mix things up. So when you're watching the movie, you get more invested in what's happening in between each and every single part of the story. Yeah, so I think that one of the things I want to mention to you, Aaron, I think that we should go over to the ending. So,
well, hang on a second. There's one last bit we have to go through before we get to the ending. So, Charlie Brown has to write a book report. He gets the little redhead girl as that, but then he realizes that, the little redhead girl ends up going away because of a family illness. So he ends up having to try and write the whole book report himself. And he feels like if he does that, then obviously he'll gain the respect of her. And so he ends up saying, oh, I need to find a really, you know, intelligent book to write. So he ends up picking War and Peace. He spends the entire time, reading War and Peace, like, for an entire weekend. And by the way, like, you notice that, you know, he's so determined that, you think that he would get distracted at some points. Like, you know, he would like, oh, hey, I'm going to go out and play with my friends. But no, he actually, you know, turns them down and says, no, this book report is too important. And so, I mean, you start to see, some more maturity, I guess you're saying, Charlie? So I think,
And here's the thing, War and Peace is not an easy read. It is over 1,000 pages long and it is very complex.
So there are people who have done entire podcasts and YouTube series on War and Peace, like, you know, going through it all. I think there's like one guy, I think, like, did like, a live stream, like, for like hours on end, just going for like, you know, going from cover to cover on War and Peace too, for charity. Yeah.
So, it's like, not easy.
This thing's a meme. Perspective. But anyway, I digress. But War and Peace, he ends up spending the entire weekend to do it, and then he ends up writing the book report. And obviously, you know, being Charlie Brown, obviously, like, it's ends up flying in the air and ends up getting shredded by like a model airplane, which, you know, was, you know, not coincidentally, is also like a model of the Red Baron as well.
So, yeah, of course. Yeah.
Yeah, because, you know, that's the way Sod Law works, apparently.
Sure, why not? Yeah, and also there was like a lot of other moments like sprinkled in between where, you know, you have Charlie Brown helping out with the dance, and you have Snoopy appearing himself as Joe Cool, which, you know, it was inevitable. I mean, next to the Flying Ace, Joe Cool is like one of his most iconic personas, and of course he steals the dance. I mean, it's not too much of a surprise. And Charlie Brown, you know, he does really well at first, and then of course, you know, he messes up, which I mean, it was to be expected for Charlie Brown, unfortunately. And then we also have him, you know, researching for War and Peace. And then eventually that doesn't turn out very well. And then, of course, we have the next part of the story where they're taking a test. And whoever does the best would be getting like themselves a nice little medal. And then they'll be presenting themselves in front of the entire school. And then Charlie Brown thinks that he was the one who did it. And everybody is really getting into Charlie Brown's success, and they are even dressing up as him. They go with him everywhere that he goes, and he is really appreciating all the attention that he's getting. And then he realizes that it wasn't his test that was the one that was the best. It ended up being Peppermint Patty of all characters, where she was basically just doodling whatever. It's actually pretty funny. It kind of reminds me of that episode of Hey Arnold, in which when the kids were taking their aptitude test to find out where they were going to be in their career, and then you have Harold, who basically just circles around all E's, and Helga, who does really, really well. And then their test gets switched up, where they thought that Harold's the smart one and Helga's the dumb one. So yeah, it kind of reminded me of that a little bit. I wouldn't be, again, we know that Craig Bartley was heavily inspired by Peanuts when he was a kid. So it's nice to see that little homage again.
I think a lot of slice of life cartoons actually had those, because you remember, like, yeah, I think Doug also had that episode as well, if you remember.
Yes, that's right. Doug did have that episode where he thought he was going to be a business executive. And then it turned out, oh no, we just got your test confused. You're actually going to be a guidance counselor.
So like, I mean, yeah, because a lot of slice of life cartoon shows had those types of episodes. But you know, this is the thing that I think people don't realize, that, you know, for a lot of shows that did slice of life, you know, back in the 80s and the 90s, Charlie Brown and Snoopy actually were like the, the primordial ooze, basically, to kind of like, you know, kind of produce some of the stuff that we see now. Hey Arnold definitely took a lot. I mean, Craig Ballas, you know, gone, you know, many podcasts on my show, on the Aaron Meta show, saying how much that, you know, he, you know, appreciates Charlie Brown and the fact that he grew up with it too. And everything. So like, you know, he's told me about how much, you know, inspiration from Peanuts has gone into Hey Arnold. So like, he's not shy about that. And I think a lot of other creators, I think of, you know, some of the cartoon shows that we, you know, talk about it on Old School Lane, I think, you know, a lot of creators will say, oh yeah, Peanuts, we definitely grew up with that. And we definitely took some inspiration from that show.
Yeah. I mean, Jim Jenkins, the creator of Doug, told me the same thing, where, you know, a lot of the stuff that he got his inspiration for making Doug on was based off of Peanuts. And it makes a lot of sense when you see Peanuts and Doug back to back, and you definitely do see that influence where, you know, you have Doug, who's a painfully shy young kid who has a crush on a girl and who has to deal with bullies, and he deals with everyday school situations. I mean, yeah, Doug is essentially Charlie Brown, so makes a lot of sense. And yeah, I mean, I would argue that a lot of slice of life cartoons that we grew up with during the 90s were essentially like taking their major cues from Peanuts, and it would follow up even to this very day, whether it be like a small little homage, whether it be an Easter egg, or whether it be elements from Peanuts that would be taking over to these shows, whether it be the characters, whether it be the animation style, whether it be the music, whether it be the storytelling. It all came from Charles Schulz's work.
So I think now we can finally get to the finale of the movie. So Charlie Brown finally decides that, you know, he's going to muster up the, you know, courage to basically, you know, talk to the little redhead girl. And, you know, it's finally the end of, you know, the school year, and finally going into summer vacation. So they pick their pen pals, and Charlie ends up with things that he's not going to end up with anybody. But the little redhead girl sets up on the class and says, no, I will be Charlie Brown's pen pal, and then leaves the classroom, effectively. But then he goes up to her house and wants to talk about why she picks it. But then he realizes that she's going on to summer camp for summer vacation, effectively. And so then there's like this massive chase through the fun fair to maybe go out to her. But as usually being Charlie Brown, obviously he can't get to her in time. And she also boards the bus, and he doesn't think he's ever going to get to her. But this is the bit where, you know, we've always, Peanuts, one thing that I definitely do, you remember in Robot Chicken when, like, you know, where they were making fun of Peanuts having like strong Christian overtones in this, and this bit obviously kind of like, you know, makes people like, you know, understand why people make fun of it for that, because he basically just like, you know, goes but you know, looks up at the sky and says, please can you just give me this one opportunity. And I'm guessing the man in the sky seems to want to give Charlie Brown this finally wants to give him his break, and so he actually gives him a kite to actually like, you know, fly him over to to the little redhead girl. And and then everyone's just amazed that, you know, Charlie's flying the kite and is goes off to like figure out how he's done it. And then the kite takes Charlie over to the little redhead girl. And then this is the great thing about this story. Like, you think that Charlie has like failed so many times to get this to impress this little redhead girl, but in actual fact, you know, unknowingly to him and probably unknowingly to us, the little red girl said, "Wait, I've just seen you, you know, help out your little sister when she was like, you know, in tears on the stage. I've seen you like, you know, help out with the dance and everything, and I've seen you, you know, also when you wrote the book report all by yourself to help me out when my grandmother was ill. Like, you know, I noticed that entire thing, and so that is great storytelling." In my opinion, like the fact that the little redhead girl has like noticed Charlie this entire time, and he's unwittingly actually, you know, done this effectively, and so I think this is great.
Now, some people actually were very upset about this ending.
Really?
Yeah, because here's the thing: if you've seen a lot of Charlie Brown specials, Charlie Brown doesn't win anything. He is always the loser. He doesn't end up winning the spelling bee. He doesn't end up with, you know, winning competitions or any of the sort. He ends up getting the short end of the stick with everything. I mean, sure, there have been like one or two exceptions. Like we mentioned before where, you know, Charlie Brown ended up, you know, kissing the little red hair girl during the homecoming dance, and in the Christmas special where, you know, everybody decides to gather up and help with setting up the Christmas tree that Charlie Brown picked up. But for the most part, yeah, Charlie Brown is seen as like the loser. And a lot of people felt that this was a cop out, saying, oh, but this doesn't capture the essence of Charlie Brown. He's supposed to be the one who gets the short end of the stick with everything. I can understand for hard.
But again, that's if you're listening to the original source material. This is not the original source material. This is like, you know, a movie contained in its own.
Exactly. That's what I was going to say, is that here's the thing that a lot of people seem to overlook, is that this is another adaptation. Sure, it's based off of Peanuts, but at the same time, it doesn't have to stick, you know, verbatim to what we already know with the Peanuts specials. And yeah, I mean, I would say that after all the stuff that Charlie Brown went through, I think that he does deserve to have at least a little bit of happiness and recognition from somebody that he really cares about. So yeah, I would say that this is a great ending where the little red hair girl was able to acknowledge that Charlie Brown is a great kid and that she would be more than happy to be his pen pal.
I mean, the worst way they could have done this ending is that basically they could have like done it where, you know, Charlie Brown finally like, you know, all wins in the end and everything like that. Like there's worse ways to write this ending. Come
sure.
on, like this is the best way you could possibly, you know, end the Charlie Brown story effectively.
I do agree. Yeah. And the fact that they were able to close it off with a comic strip with Charles Schulz's signature on it. I mean, there's a lot of moments like that in the movie where we do get to see like the 2D animation with, you know, Charlie Brown's thinking also with just like his daydreaming, where we get to see it in the form of those 1960s comic panels, which is a great touch, by the way. So, yeah, I mean, the way that they were able to end it off that way was such a wonderful just closure to conclude this movie.
Yeah, and like, you know, after everything that Charlie Brown has been through, like, you know, come on. I mean, like, that should have been a moment that should have made people like very happy, if anything. Like, you know, if you're miserable about ending, seriously, like, you know, what are you doing with your life?
Okay. Yeah, I know for a lot of people it's like, oh, it didn't really like end it the way that a lot of Charlie Brown specials do, but you know what, I mean,
this isn't a Charlie Brown special. This is a movie that basically, you know, takes the story to another level effectively. So like, you know, this isn't like, you know, a special that's going to be on television and nothing's really going to happen. It's just there for like, you know, ratings and stuff like that. No, this is the theatrical production of Peanuts. It needs like to have that big ending, and it gave what I think is a really great ending.
I do agree.
I thought. Yeah. Yeah. So.
Yeah. Unfortunately, this movie didn't do very well in the box office compared to a lot of Blue Sky Studios movies that we talked about, where if we, you know, we talked about in the Ice Age movies and even in the Rio movies where they were able to make like 400 million, 500 million. I mean, I think that the third Ice Age movie made over 800 million and it was like the highest grossing movie of its time. Unfortunately, the Peanuts movie only made about $246 million at the box office, which is actually the third lowest grossing Blue Sky movie that we've talked about so far.
Yeah, and the thing about it, this is like one of their best movies.
Yeah, it is.
Right. Yeah, that's sad, really, to think about. The thing that, you know, some of the more mediocre, even probably even the worst Ice Age sequels probably made more money than, you know, the than the Peanuts movie, which is, you know, which I think is probably like one of their best examples of Blue Sky doing like, you know, their best work.
Yeah, so if we take a look at the top 10 highest grossing animated films of 2015, it doesn't reach the top five. It's only at number seven. And, you know, Minions was the one that was the highest grossing movie of its time, making over $1 billion.
Well, it's Minions, isn't it? Like, you know, as much as we hate Minions, unfortunately, there's a lot of people who like them because, you know, Minions. But, you know, it's just, it's,
True,
yeah.
true.
So, but, you know, hey, at least, you know, there is some appreciation for, like, you know, some of the work that we got here.
Yeah,
So,
absolutely. I mean, I think that if we hadn't had this movie, then we wouldn't even have the Snoopy show that's currently on Apple TV.
oh yeah, exactly. Like, you know, this I think kept, you know, the kept Peanuts in the attention, I think, of a lot of people. So, I mean, yeah, I'm really glad that the Snoopy show's finally, like, you know, has got it, has got this. And yeah, I think this movie, if this hadn't happened, I don't think we would have ended up with a Snoopy show, I don't think.
Yeah, and also people would kind of like forget about the Peanuts. You remember several years ago, I think we even talked about this in Erin and Patricia when the Charlie Brown Christmas special, which had been a staple for CBS for decades, was finally no longer going to be airing over there, and people were really, really, really upset about it. Like here, that's amazing. Like, you know, something that had been a staple on television for over 50 years, and then they're just saying, oh yeah, we're not going to air it anymore. And you would think that, okay, maybe they'll be like, oh, I don't care about that stuff anymore. But no, millions upon millions of people were really, really upset about it. That just goes to show you that people still love the Peanuts characters to this very day.
Yeah. So, like, I mean, so Peanuts has its place in nostalgia for a lot of people, and will want to pass it on to their younger generations, and they will also carry it too. You know, like, it's just, it would be a shame if it kind of just faded away and had nothing to go for it. I think it definitely deserves, definitely with the characters, definitely with the, like, the whole setup, definitely with the way that, you know, it's carried on through, like, you know, decade after decade after decade. Like, you know, there's Snoopy definitely does a chance, there's a chance
Yes,
in this.
absolutely. And I think that every generation should get introduced to the Peanuts characters, whether it be through the TV shows, whether it be through the specials, even with this movie. I think that it is able to appeal to any audience within any time period. That's what makes it so universally appealing, is that you know, it doesn't take place in a specific time period that would be out of place for a lot of people. The storylines are simple, but at the same time, they're very complex to any situation that a kid is going through in real life. And also, it has a lot of genuinely funny moments that people can be able to, you know, laugh alongside with their parents or even with their own friends. So, yeah, it brings a total package for anybody. Anybody can enjoy this. Kids, adults, anybody. And I think that's what makes Peanuts still a major staple in pop culture after all these years.
Yeah, definitely. Anyway, I think it's time to give this movie a score, don't you think?
Yes.
So yeah, okay then. So, here's the thing. So, like, this is definitely a Peanuts movie if you ever, like, you know, described it to me. I think the music is great, the animation is spectacular. I think, you know, the voices that they brought into this, I think it was, we made the whole thing extremely genuine. And the only thing I'll basically say is that, I mean, like, as much as I like try and get into, like, you know, the Flying Aces, like, you know, segments that, you know, they put in the middle, it's kind of like, you know, the devil, like the Cypher's life stuff. Like, I mean, no, like, every time I was like looking, I was kind of like, when are we going to get back to the main story and everything? So, like, with all that put in me, like, there are far more positives than there are negatives in this. And so I will be unfair to, like, give this, you know, a lower score. So I'm going to say 9.5 out of 10.
Yeah, 9.5 is a great score because, yeah, sure, there's some things here and there that they could have tightened up, but for the most part, it's almost flawless. Like everything that you would expect to see from Peanuts is there. The animation style, the voice acting, the storytelling, the characters, everything fits so well within Peanuts. It is almost a perfect interpretation of what we'd expect to see from any of the Charles Schulz's comic strips or any of the TV specials or films from Charlie Brown, even the stage show, You're a Good Man, Charlie Brown. So yeah, I would say that this fits perfectly alongside with anything that we've seen from the Peanuts franchise as a whole. So yeah, this is definitely like one of their best you know, installments of Peanuts. And I would say, like I, you know, like Aaron said earlier, this is the best Blue Sky movie that we've seen so far.
Okay, and that is us for now for Journey to the Blue Sky. Our next movie, unfortunately, is going to be another Ice Age sequel.
Well, the good news is it's the last one.
Yeah, okay, so tune in next time for Journey to the Blue Sky when we check out Ice Age Collision Course.
Oh boy.
Yeah, and let's hope the collision isn't too hard.
Yes, please. I mean, I don't know
Yeah.
how much more I can take.
Actually, one thing I'm actually thinking, actually, as we look through this list, and I'm sorry, like I'm extending out the outro to this, but I mean, we only have like basically three movies left, and unfortunately, like they're not. I mean, Peanuts, I think, is probably like the peak. I think we're going to get for like Blue Sky quality. The other ones, we're going to have to talk about them, I think.
Yeah, unfortunately, it goes downhill from here.
Okay, see you later, everybody.
Bye.